Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at physical therapy issues today and zeroing in a bit on preventing and treating elbow pain. Our two guests are experts back with us, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, welcome back.
Good to be here.
And Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. And Jill, good to see you as well.
It's great to be here, Larry.
As we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Do you notice pain in your elbow with certain types of movements? We'll answer those questions and others relating to other physical therapy issues. You can join the conversation. Number to call is 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill, you don't have to be a tennis player in order to get tennis elbow. Tell us about tennis elbow and the symptoms.
Sure. Well, tennis elbow refers to pain at the lateral aspect of your elbow. We call it lateral elbow tendinopathy. Gripping a tennis racket is one way to get it, but as a general rule, it is commonly seen in individuals who have to grip anything. So at the start of the show, you had mentioned gardening. And so people who will grip a rake and they haven't done that gripping exercise for quite some time, that is enough to exacerbate their symptoms. Gripping a snow shovel. In my population, I work a lot with the crew team, and gripping the oars.
Oh, sure.
Is a factor. It could be playing golf.
Yeah.
And for people who work with instruments in their hands, hammers, screwdrivers, drills, anything that requires that constant tension or repetitive motion of the wrist will cause a problem. And it's a real issue for a worker because that's their vocation. That's how they make their money.
Right.
And you can't just stop because your elbow's bothering you.
And I understand there are some new practice guidelines for treating tennis elbow?
Right. One of the things that the journal that kind of oversees or is commonly used with orthopedic and sports physical therapists create what we call clinical practice guidelines. And these experts in the field kind of summarize all of the information out there and establish guidelines. And they actually give different examination and treatment ideas a letter grade based on the research. And so looking at treatment of individuals with what we call lateral epicondalgia, things that came back pretty high or things that have good evidence to support them include using therapeutic strengthening exercises, which has somewhat been a mainstay of rehabilitation for physical therapists. Using elbow manual therapy, whether it's a manipulation or joint mobilization, came back with a grade of a letter B. Dry needling came back saying it's pretty good to use it at the elbow. Then there are other things that came back that are a little bit more questionable. An orthosis, for example, a splint came back with actually a letter D.
Ooh.
But Lori and interestingly, discussing this before we jumped on the air, you always have to think about the return on your investment and the cost-benefit ratio. And
a splint's not going to cost very much.
And it could make a great change for someone.
So let's clarify what the letter means. The letter D is not like the grade D, where if my kid came home with that, I'd be really angry. So the letter D means that there's conflicting evidence.
Right. Mm.
There is typically conflicting evidence when the research is underpowered or there's methodologic issues with the research such that they cannot come to a definitive decision. However, that same orthosis splint was also given an F. And again, an F does not mean the same thing. An F in this grading system means that expert opinion says you can use this. So, you know, as someone who teaches students about interpreting evidence, having a wide and deep understanding of the methodologic issues around creating this research suggests that you can't just say, oh, because this research, you know, didn't find anything, that it's not the case. Jill's jumping out of her seat over there.
Well, and I think one of the challenges, especially with something like a wrist orthosis, is this is one multimodal intervention that a physical therapist would use. We would never just hand somebody a tennis elbow strap and say, go on your way.
Yeah.
So it's done in conjunction with exercise, mobility, all of these other things. So to Lori's point, it's very difficult from a research perspective to tease out, oh, is this intervention in isolation effective? So I'm sure that's why it probably got the lower letter that it did.
And we seem to be using laser for almost everything these days. Does it come into play with elbows?
Well, laser got a letter C saying that they it may be used for improvements in pain and grip, seen up to about 4 weeks for individuals. But again, it's one of those things we would never as physical therapists use in isolation. I put it in the category of passive modalities with ultrasound and phonophoresis, iontophoresis, those different kind of passive modalities, none of which really came back with robust evidence.
Exactly, exactly. So if you think about loading, okay, and how much you use your wrist. So, for example, this lateral, which is the outside of the elbow, tendinopathy that we see, those tendons, just for our listeners, those are the tendons that function at your wrist, which is why a lot of our interventions are directed at your wrist. So even though the pain is at your elbow, it's not the elbow muscles, it's the wrist muscles. And those wrist muscles are working anytime you grip. So if you think of taking that gallon of milk out of your fridge and opening a door, those are two of the classic things we hear that cause symptoms. And it's because those muscles are stabilizing across your wrist. So a lot of our interventions are directed at your wrist. So if you think about how often you do that, you grip something during the day, and then you have a 6-minute ultrasound or however long a laser therapy is,
yeah,
it's really hard to get ahead of the amount of loading you do in a normal day in your dominant arm.
I had tennis elbow. I you know, it was a stupid me trying to be helpful with somebody.
Nothing wrong with that, Larry.
Somebody was having troubles with their bone, and it went away after almost exactly a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So does it, I mean, can it be, I guess it can be fully cured. I'm living proof of that, and I think you are too, Lori.
Yes, I am. I had a medial elbow, or call it golfer's elbow, the same thing on the inside of the elbow from shoveling, and it took about a year, and of course, I know better. I know what I should do, and I tried everything, and some of it sort of worked and much of it didn't. And then in a year, it just went away.
Was compliance an issue?
Compliance is a huge issue.
But your point, Larry, of it being it taking about a year is we don't categorize this as an itis anymore because it has become chronic. And we see kind of degradation and wear and tear of the tendons now. And it that's why we've changed the intervention approach a little bit, and B, it does take a really long time, especially in your dominant hand.
I'm looking at an email we got from a listener, and here's somebody who's, I think, in a position where they have to be doing the same thing all the time. This is somebody who is confined to a wheelchair, has tennis elbow, and of course, from moving the wheels, I imagine, gets that, but then they have the same repetitive position problems doing reading and using a cell phone.
Yeah, that's a really difficult situation because they have to propel their wheelchair. So if they're in a wheelchair, they need to do that repetitive activity, not unlike the person who swings a hammer for their job. It's got to be done. So then you try to cut back on the loading of that joint where you can. So the things like the cell phone and the book, you need to find some alternative way, either holding it in the other hand, getting a stand, some sort of splint. I think Jill knows about some sort of device to hold your book or your phone for you. And then this is a situation where I would use a wrist splint during activity because we don't have a lot of other options on the table for treatment. And we would do some stretching and strengthening of those muscles. And we can get into why you still strengthen the muscle in an overuse injury a little bit later if we want.
Right. And an ergonomic assessment of this individual in their wheelchair to make sure that they're... So the question is, when you wheel in a wheelchair, that should be fairly symmetrical for the most part. And so then the question becomes why, and it, perhaps it's in this individual's dominant hand, but then you'd want to look at the shoulder mobility and mobility of the joints kind of above and below to make sure that those aren't contributing factors. And one of the low-budget tennis elbow straps that I like to try with people before they go out and buy an expensive one is to go to Dick's Sporting Goods or somewhere and just get a roll of pre-wrap, that wrap that you put on prior to taping an ankle. And they're $3 or $4. And literally just do maybe 8-10 revolutions around your forearm and then kind of roll that pre-wrap up so it literally makes a strap and put it right over those extensor muscles. That probably be something that would be worth a try for this individual as well. And that
so
would be
the forearm versus up to the, but not right past the elbow.
Correct. Kind of right where the bony part of your elbow is where those muscles attach. I would go
to that point
towards the hand, away from it, probably a finger width or so. And then the wrist splint would be another option for sure.
Yeah, that's called a counterforce brace. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you hold your arm out palm down, just as Jill was doing in the studio, when you put your finger right below the elbow, kind of right at the sore spot, and pretend you're typing with your fingers, you will feel that tendon, and that's right where that rolled up pre-wrap should go.
We should take some calls. Nick in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
My question's got a couple of parts, and you guys are awesome. You helped me through the TBI, but no, I got a shoulder. I got a torn rotator cuff. My question for you is, I had two options when I talked to the doctor. It's cortisone or surgery. I've tried cortisone 4 shots, and it's not doing anything. So what can I expect from that, the surgery? And is there anything at home I could like kind of limp it along until I actually do get surgery? Because the healing seems like it takes forever.
Okay.
So, first of all, do you have a partial tear of your rotator cuff or a complete tear? And remind me, Nick, tell me what you're doing for work. That'd probably be something we'd want to know.
I can't do anything for work now because I got the TBI that you guys helped me through.
Yep.
So, I do cashiering part-time at a retail store, and that's it.
Okay.
But if I go to grab something, like if, say, out of instinct something falls and I go to grab it with my right hand, oh, my God, it's excruciating pain. Well, that's,
okay.
Yeah. And I got like a partial tear is what he said. Sorry.
Partial tear. Okay.
Okay.
So are they going to do a decompression? Do you know what they said they were going to do?
He just said surgery, but I'm going to have an advisory meeting tomorrow for it.
So I think finding out what type of surgery they're going to do would be a really good idea. If they're going to go in and just do a debridement and clean up the joint, that would be what I would be most... I'd advocate for the most, I would say, before I do a rotator cuff repair, especially if you have a small tear.
Right, and it's a partial tear. So did they inject the bursa, those 4 injections they did? Do you know?
In the back, that's what I know. So I figured I respect your opinions because you guys are my angels. So.
did you try physical therapy for this yet, Nick?
I didn't do anything.
Okay. So then it does sound a little bit more mechanical in nature. So I would, if you're going to discuss surgery, I think I would go with a debridement or kind of a cleanup of the shoulder before I'd go with a rotator cuff repair.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm not seeing a repair. They don't typically do repairs of partial tears. So, yeah, usually they would go in and they would do a debridement and a decompression. Mm-hmm. So, and the recovery from that is relatively quick. So if they're talking about a long recovery, then you're probably talking about a rotator cuff repair. So, and they would probably do that in conjunction, I would hope, with the decompression.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to repair a rotator cuff and leave a type 2 acromion or or an inflamed bursa there.
Right.
Good luck with that, Nick. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too. I hope you will. You can email us to ideas@WPR.org or phone 800-642-1234. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guests as we talk physical therapy. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today. We're zeroing in a bit on your elbow, but we're taking other questions as well with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Nancy emailed and wondered if you could review more clearly the tennis versus golf inner-outer elbow. Also, she's found some forearm up-to-elbow issues now that she's returned to knitting.
Oh, sure. No.
And
yes.
She's finding it simply loosening up seems to be an answer. Any other ideas? She hates having to give it up again. And when years ago she had severe tendonitis in her wrist from knitting, so she had to give it up. She's got it back now.
Well, that's great to hear. So there is a difference between lateral epicondylia, or what we call tennis elbow, and medial epicondylia, or golfer's elbow, which is what Lori had. Lateral epicondylia, or tennis elbow, is much, much more common, anywhere from 5 to 20 times more common than the medial side. The medial side typically involves the wrist flexors, where you would bring your palm towards your face, and those... That's kind of the biggest difference is it's one is the extensor side and one is the flexor side. They're both going to be impacted by grip and how you grip things and how you position your arm for knitting.
Right, right. So the lateral, that's the outside, that's the thumb side. And the medial, the golfer's elbow, that's your little finger side or the inside. So if you haven't done any strengthening for your elbow and wrist, Nancy, I think you said you were retired. Now that you're retired, you're probably spending more time with needles in your hand. I think you need to have a good strengthening program for your wrist and forearm to prevent this from coming back. If you had a severe case in the past, you are more likely, the odds of you developing again are higher than the average Joe. So if you were given an exercise program at the time you had this in the past, I would start that again, kind of slowly working your way back into that and balancing that with your time knitting and just being cautious and alert to signs of overuse.
Good luck. Thank you so much for that email. Kristen in Oconomowoc, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm a 70-year-old woman. I have two questions, actually. About 2 years ago, I went limping into my sports medicine doctor with pain in my right knee, which I figured out was due to an old injury and was diagnosed with osteoarthritis. I had three of hyaluronic acid. But after the first one, 2 days later, the pain was gone. The sports medicine doctor told me I was 8 to 10 years away from a knee replacement. So that's one question. How on earth could she know that? Would she have such faith in the physical therapy? Because I know the research on hyaluronic acid is pretty sketchy. But I did start doing physical therapy. I got a set of 4 exercises that I do every other day. And I have been pain-free for almost 2 years. So I guess my other question is, do I go back to the physical therapist ever? Do I cross my fingers that... Do I just keep doing the exercises or check back in? What about that?
Well, that's a great question. And let's start with a hyaluronic acid injection. So I'm glad you clarified that it's not a cortisone injection. Hyaluronic acid is a different substance or structure that they put into your joint to kind of help nurture or create a positive environment for your articular cartilage, which is that cartilage that can kind of wear and tear away, where we result in osteoarthritis. And Larry has a story for you about his experience with hyaluronic acid injections.
Yeah, I was scheduled to have surgery, and they said, well, let's try the acid shots. And so we did 3 of them. And I realized about a week before the surgery that I had no pain anymore. And I have been pain-free. How many years has it been?
Oh, that's what I wanted to know. How many years has it been, Larry?
10, 12, 12 years?
Well, there you go, Kristen.
I'm not going back. I'm not going back. I'm happy. Exactly.
So, yeah, the hyaluronic acid that Jill described is... For the layman, it's WD-40 for your joint.
Correct.
So, you know, for all the time people said, God, can't they just inject a little WD-40? Well, somebody figured it out, and they do. So it's not for everybody. So if you have severe osteoarthritis, then you're too far gone. Should you go back to your PT? You know, Larry hasn't gone back to a surgeon, but should you go back to your PT? I think it's reasonable to go back and say, hey, I'm doing great. What would the next thing be to prevent my having to have a knee replacement down the road? So if those exercises have worked well for you and you've gotten stronger and so on, you might want to think about what's next in the category of prevention so that you can keep putting this off, because it's not inevitable that you will have a knee replacement.
Right. And Larry is living proof of that. He was just telling us about how many miles he walked last week on vacation, which was what?
About 60 miles I did in the 6 day, about 10 miles a day.
Yeah, on pavement.
On pavement.
So that's that's always my example of, like, your knee's fine until you walk 10 miles at Disney on pavement in flip-flops. You know, Larry walked, you know, for 6 days on pavement, and he is
in good shoes, though, right, Larry?
In good very shoes. Good shoes.
Right,
very good
right. shoes.
But he also walks every day.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
But it was much greater dosage of walking than he usually does, but his knee tolerated it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go, Kristen. Thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call. Charlotte in River Falls, I believe it's your turn. Hi, Charlotte.
Yeah, this is a little unrelated to tennis elbow, but I've had reoccurring adductor groin tendonitis. Started when I was 40, and I'm 56 now. And last time I went to physical therapy, it actually triggered it. They were trying to strengthen the adductor muscles. And most recently, I went on the elliptical 3 times in January and been suffering from this adductor tendonitis. I'm reluctant to go back to PT because the last time it actually triggered it pretty severely. But the one thing that they did do was dry needling that helped. But are there other muscles that I could work, opposing muscles that might be weak? I did a lot of horseback riding as a youth, so I don't know if that affects the adductor muscles, if they're overdeveloped. I have no idea.
That's a great question, and that's probably an important factor for you, Charlotte. When you say you have this tendonitis, is it at the adductor insertion at your pubic bone, or is it along the length of the muscle, or is it more down by your knee?
It actually started in the groin, but now it's throughout. I have, like, knots in the muscles, and it is concentrated at the knee, at the groin, but in the middle of the muscle as well.
Okay. Mm. Are you hypermobile? Are you kind of on the loose end of things? I just keep wondering about, like, core stability and stability at the pubic tubercle area, and is this adductor working overtime to foster some sort of stability? Lori just looked at me like I had 3 heads. So, Charlotte...
My sister's hypermobile. I can easily touch my hands, you know, my palms to the floor. But other than that, I wouldn't say, I mean, I don't do a lot of stretching, but.
Okay. Yeah. So the question is, why is one of your adductors working so hard? So I would sort of back up and look at leg length differences, look at movement patterns. What kind of work do you do?
Currently, I just do a lot of walking with my work, a lot of moving around.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you're not moving always in the same direction?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, your adductors work during gait as well.
Right.
So I'm wondering if she's on an uneven surface, like people who walk on the slant of a road, or if you're carrying a bag on one side where your adductors are working harder on one side. I'm trying to figure out why you're having symptoms on one side and not the other.
Right. Yeah. I keep going back to the pelvis.
Yeah.
Wondering if it's offering some sort of stability at the pelvis, and wondering if seeing a pelvic health PT.
Yeah.
Even though it's, I don't know.
So the other thing is, have they imaged your hips?
No, I did have a hip replacement, which...
On that side?
The hip, on my left side, where the tendonitis originated. And after the hip replacement, I had no pain, except for I had immediate tendonitis pain. And then I broke my left leg, and then I got ended up with tendonitis in the right groin and, you know, internal adductor.
So you, so your symptoms currently are on the right side, but you had a left total hip, and you had these same symptoms on the left side after your hip replacement?
Yes, correct.
And then and the and a femur fracture on that side?
A foot metatarsal.
Oh, a foot metatarsal fracture. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Scooter and using my right leg all the time.
You were on a scooter and using your right leg to propel yourself. Okay. This is all becoming much clearer now. So yes, PT, maybe find a different PT. This is an issue that is much more complex than it seemed at the beginning of this phone call. You have a lot going on there. So I would say, Jill's raising her hand.
Go on.
Oh, so I would try to see somebody else and just know that garden variety strengthening or starting like with resistive bands or leg lifts or things like that, that dosage is going to be too high. The key here is going to be finding the right dosage of activity to start to build things back up without flaring it.
And going back to the whole scooter business, I still go back to the pelvis because if you don't have your scooter set at an appropriate level, you're going to be asymmetrical and tipped, which is where my head kept going the whole time.
So could be SI joint.
Exactly.
Could be, Yeah, could be pelvis. So someone looking at your pelvis and SI joint could be out of whack, and that may be perpetuating your symptoms. Well done, Jill.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was not the most indirect route we took to that one.
We took a lot of tangents that one. But it was good. It was all good,
helpful.
Charlotte. Thank you.
Let's take another call here while we're actually before that, because horses came up. Edna in Retreat emailed us and wonders what kind of exercises would strengthening her right leg and keep it flexible so she can swing it up over the saddle, which is on the horse's back while she's mounting. How to get that right leg over?
Great practice. I mean, there are few things in life that are like swinging a leg up over a horse other than swinging a leg up over a horse.
So my first thought is some like really wide stance.
Lunges.
And then lunging side to side and probably holding those positions to kind of let tissues creep out, things like that.
Yeah.
So she's got to swing her right leg over. I would lunge onto her left leg and keep that right foot on the ground, kind of in a very wide jumping jack type position, and do some of those side to side before I mounted my horse.
And then if I was really good, when I was way over on the left side, I would see if I could pick up my right leg and balance on that left leg and stretch it further so that you have that stability on the left side while the right leg is in the air.
Right. And that knee is bent, that left knee is bent. That'd be a really good example.
Should we try that during the break?
Sure. We'll have Larry try it.
We'll have Larry try it.
You're not going to get me over a horse. Oh, boy. Let's go to Deborah in Menominee Falls. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, Jill and Lori. My question, too, it's really not tennis elbow or anything related to the elbow. I'm just wondering if I'm about 6 weeks post cellulitis diagnosis in my thumb, and I have not... I've seen some improvement, but I cannot just without assistance or with my other hand making it happen. I cannot move my digit, the end digit of that thumb down, which obviously affects things like grip and, you know, other things that I do, things that I'm trying to manipulate. And so I'm wondering, is there such a thing as therapy for that or strengthening or... How should I go about trying to get that motion and that ability to move that back?
Do you know why you can't move it? Is it because the joint won't bend or that you don't have the muscular control?
Well, I can move it with my right hand.
Okay.
I can totally press that down, and that has improved. I mean, when I was closer to the diagnosis, that wasn't moving at all because it was so swollen. But I can move it with my opposing hand now, but I can't do much with just my will to move my left hand to move that thumb. I mean, I can move it a little bit, but not like the other one, and it affects my grip.
Yeah, you're getting there because you can now passively move it with your other hand, and you have a little bit of movement. I would see a hand therapist, certified hand therapist, and both physical therapist and occupational therapists are certified hand therapists, and that's where I'd go. And you are absolutely right that thumb function is critical to hand function. So I'd get in, and it may just take a couple visits to help move things along as you continue to recover from your cellulitis.
There you go, Deborah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's go to Peg in Wilton next. Hi, Peg.
Peg in Wilton, and can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have had, about 15 years ago, a left shoulder rotator cuff repair. And at this point in my life, the shoulder, I can't lay on it, sleep on it. It's causing a lot of irritation and numbness in my hand. Now, I did not have anything on the right side, but that's also causing problems in my hand. I have been told I have something pinched in the back of the neck, which where I have some arthritis.
So what's your question?
Some kind of therapies that would work for that?
Yes. So it's Lori and I, and actually Larry, are all looking at each other, and it does really sound, Peg, like the source of this is probably coming from your neck or your cervical spine, because you have symptoms in both arms, both hands. Anytime we see symptoms on both sides, we immediately look to a central pathology or central condition. And here you've told us that you do have that. So seeing a physical therapist for neck mobility, perhaps opening up that space a little bit to alleviate some of that numbness and tingling, will be very important. Talking about sleeping positions for your neck will also be important. So I hear you say you had a rotator cuff repair 15 years ago. That's good to know, but that is not the driver here. I think your cervical spine or your neck is actually the driver for this.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Peg, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to John in Two Rivers next. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Big fan of your show. You're welcome. I have a question, and this is in regards to, it has a happy ending. I had a rotator cuff tear show up on an MRI, and I've been having pain in my shoulder for quite a long time. I kind of put it off. I like to exercise a lot, and I was living through the pain. And so they did find a tear, and they said that there were probably some bone spurs to clean up. And this was about 3 weeks ago, and it has a happy ending because I was a little groggy coming out of the surgery, but I remember the surgeon saying, your MRI fooled me. There was no tear to repair, and we just did the cleanup of the bone spurs. And so when I went for my follow-up visit with his assistant, she said in his 20 years of doing shoulder cuff repair, he has never, ever had a time where an MRI fooled him. And she said, we were all blown away. They stopped the surgery and said, they paused it and said, do we have the right patient? Because everything was totally clean. And she said, they were all blown away. And so I don't know, did something supernatural happen, or is there a chance that something showed up that really wasn't there?
So what did they do? First of all, you said they cleaned up your shoulder. So they found, did they take out a bursa, or was there loose bodies, or what did they do to clean up your shoulder?
They said there were some bone spurs that they found, and they showed me that. And she showed me the pictures and everything. She said it looked totally clean. She said there's absolutely no arthritis and everything looks great, but they did clean up bone spurs. And so I'm still in the recovery process for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be artifact of some sort. I guess that would be really a question for the radiologist who read the MRI to go back and say, you know, what is it that you saw here? And and why. So
yeah,
but well, that's great news. That's really
right.
good news.
And that's what we were talking about earlier with Nick
yeah.
is when we were talking about just having a cleanup or a debris month. This is exactly what we're talking about. What John had, they just removed some spurs and some loose bodies, and you're feeling good, John.
Absolutely. They said I'm going to be good to go in probably 6 weeks. I can get back into my exercise routine, and I like to do a lot of work in my woods. And so, yeah, I'm happy as can be that I'm not going to go through the long recovery process. So it was great news.
Yeah. Yeah. John, thanks a lot. Good news.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's interesting to hear that the, you know, as our surgeons say, we don't operate on imaging.
Correct.
We operate on people. And this is a case in point, you know, imaging
yeah.
isn't always correct.
Yeah. John, thank you again. Arlene in Wausau, we go to you now. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. I have a comment regarding the lady who had the problem with the leg and the pelvis and things, because I broke my metatarsal back in September, and I did use the scooter, but it was only for 2 or 3 weeks. Other than that, I was wearing the boot and the cast, and when I was wearing them, my leg was longer than my good leg. So after I got them off, I did experience problems with my back and hip. It all straightened out finally, you know, with just exercising and stretching. But yes, that's what I told them. They should issue you another shoe that's the same height as the boot.
It's called an even up.
It's called an even up.
And
they should. And yeah, we do. But a lot of times the surgeons
don't
do that, or they're not aware of the problems that that uneven leg causes. I mean, some people, you know, if you're 15 and you're walking around with an uneven leg for a couple of weeks, you'll probably recover. You know, if you're 50 or 60 and have some underlying arthritis or some back issues, that leg length difference for
Absolutely.
2 or 3 weeks is going to wreak havoc on your body.
Right? Yeah. Arlene, thank you
yeah.
so much.
Great point, Arlene. Thanks
yeah.
for bringing that up.
Tom in Knowlton, we'll go to you. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, everybody. A couple of weeks ago, I knelt down on my left knee and had this excruciating pain. And I was able to, one spot in the middle of my kneecap just felt very tender. And even at times, I could feel that it seemed hot. So I thought, and then it seemed to go away, but then a couple nights, I just couldn't sleep. There was so much pain. So I went to the doctor this morning, and he diagnosed bursitis, but what I'm wondering, they prescribed prednisone and some cold, ice. But I'm wondering what might have caused that, and then what happens now going forward.
Okay.
So it sounds to me like you probably have an acute housemaid's knee, or what we call, there's a bursa that sits right on your kneecap, and it's called housemaid's knee because... apparently, Lori and I are the only two people left in the world that do this. But we do scrub our floors on our hands and knees. And so when you kind of rock back and forth on your kneecap, you can irritate that bursa. So that's why it's called housemaid's knee. So it sounds like for whatever reason, Tom, when you knelt, you created this acute case of prepatellar bursitis.
And just to make you feel better, we also see it in wrestlers.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were wrestling before
that. So... because you've taken the stimulus away, you're not kneeling on it, with the prednisone and some icing, it should probably kind of resolve on its own. I definitely make sure you maintain your flexibility and range of motion. And Lori has something to say.
Yeah, you know, and it sometimes these can take a long time
yeah.
to go away, and then they're easily irritated to come back. So, you know, so don't worry about that. Can they drain them? Yes. The rate of infection for draining these is higher than many other bursa, so they are typically reluctant to drain these. So if anyone is eager to drain it, I would take a step back and maybe get another opinion. But just watching your kneeling position and things like that to the best of your ability is going to keep this thing at bay.
Good luck. Tom, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Jill Tye-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tine-Brody, who is a physical therapist as well and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. questions for them, open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Looking at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Let's call us online now. Let's go to Christina in Chippewa. Christina, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. Good to talk to you.
And you as well. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been in physical therapy on and off for probably about the last 20 years. I have a chronic health condition due to a spontaneous cerebral spinal fluid leak, which produced a benign tumor, which was removed, did some damage to my spinal cord. I can walk, but I have balance issues and some weakness on the right and numbness on the left. I think one of my legs is shorter. When I stand, it feels like that. But that's not something that we've talked about with my current physical therapist or doctor. And I just wonder how good I can get without having a lift in my shoe or something like that. Or how do I find out if that will help? Does that make sense?
It does. So, yeah, it's difficult to tell if the feeling you have that you have a leg length discrepancy comes from some lack of sensation due to your injury, or if it's a true bony leg length discrepancy. To truly measure a leg length discrepancy, you need to do plain films. You need to do standing x-rays to truly measure it if you really want to be accurate. There are a couple measurements your physical therapist could take in the clinic to see if you do have a leg length discrepancy, and then address it. But almost everybody has a slight leg length discrepancy. So then deciding if it's something you want to address will be something you'd have to discuss with your PT. And as a general rule, we only correct for about 50% of a leg length discrepancy.
So there are two kinds of leg length discrepancies. There are true leg length mm-hmm. discrepancies and apparent leg length discrepancies. So Jill was describing a true leg length discrepancy. An apparent one is when your pelvis is asymmetric, so upslip, downslip, rotation, or a scoliosis that creates a pelvic tipping and an apparent leg length difference. And those we address at the primary source if we can. If we can't, so for example, if you have a fixed scoliosis that we can't change, then correcting a leg length difference to accommodate that is something that we would think about. So the first step, as Jill described, is figuring out, is there a leg length difference? Is it a true leg length and or an apparent? If it's apparent, where is the primary source and can we address it there? And if not, then do we try to correct for it?
And the other thing I will say that I learned from a PT colleague of mine here in town who works with a lot of people with scoliosis is I used to always just think that if somebody had a leg length discrepancy, you should give them a heel lift. But she had mentioned that you really want to use a full length lift.
Oh.
Just because a heel lift will actually, as you alluded to, Lori, can change your pelvis. It'll put you in a little bit of an anterior pelvic tilt. So to actually use a full length lift, and she put me in contact with an amazing company, and you buy them their 8 millimeters thick, and you can peel off a millimeter at a time and put them in your shoes is the way to go. So if this is something that you, Christina, and your therapist think you want to do, I would recommend a full-length insert versus just a heel lift.
There you go. Christina, good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Well, let's turn to Tom in Green Bay next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. About a year and a half ago, you had an orthopedic surgeon on. I don't know if it was your show or another morning show. And the doctor had written a book on taking a leaf, stripping the DNA out of it. He said he searched thousands of leaves and stripped the DNA out and put your own DNA in. And he was sliding the it right in your joint. And he said it was going to be mainstream by the end of 2023. And I just wondered if your guests had any more information on where they are with that.
I'm trying to remember. That does not ring a bell with me. It might have been the morning show. But Laura, you know.
Yeah, no, this is not anything that I have heard about in testing or or otherwise. So
I'm sorry we can't help you with that one, Tom.
If you figure out the source for that, if you remember, if you can track it down, let us know. I'd be curious to know more about that. But I haven't seen anything and anything that I read in the basic science journals or the clinical journals at all. Anything beyond CRISPR.
Okay. All right, there you go, Tom. I'm sorry we don't have more information for you on that one. Patty in River Falls, we'll go to you. Hi, Patty.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess, still. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My mother had a knee replacement done over a year ago. She had both knees done, actually. She's 90 years old. And the one was just went perfectly. The second one, she's had problems with it, and she was very good about her physical therapy afterwards. And it's so painful, she can't really use it. And she's seen the doctor about it several times since, and they say it looks like it's, you know, perfect in there. I was at a physical therapy visit recently, and I mentioned it to her, and she said, has anybody looked at her spine or her back? And I mentioned that to my mom. My therapist said that it could be referred pain from her spine, and she's complains about it. She can barely bend it, and the pain shoots down the front of her leg. So I don't know if
L4,
yeah. So it could be. So typically, if she's at rest in a comfortable position with her spine well supported, she shouldn't have knee pain unless she has constant pressure on that L4 nerve root on the, I guess it's the right side, is that right? On the most recent knee replacement. So,
yeah, and femoral nerve. I was also thinking about just femoral nerve.
Does she have full motion in her knee?
Yes, she's gone through everything, and they just say, you know, she's had all sorts of stuff checked, and they say there shouldn't be a problem. But she did, when they did do that knee, they had to stick her several times, she said. It was like four times to get the spinal in.
So does she have, for example, 120 degrees of flexion in her knee?
You know, hon, I don't.
Okay.
I don't know that. But they said that everything looks, you know, perfect. It's so painful when she tries to use it. She can't.
Okay.
It's very painful when she's walking.
Right. Okay. So
are you thinking L4? Well,
I'm thinking it certainly could be coming from her back.
Right.
And her therapist, who has been working with her and looking at her, has that thought in his or her mind that it could be coming from the back. So my guess is that they have ruled out any primary problem at the knee. So my guess is the knee rehabilitation itself is not the issue, but there's pain for some reason, and it could be coming from farther up the chain.
So right? Where do you go for that, then?
Well, a physical therapist could certainly evaluate that as well, and I would be curious if unloading the spine made her feel better.
As in putting her in a pool.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I would almost use that as a differential diagnosis to see if I somehow unloaded her back. Is her knee flexion better or less painful? So even putting her on a table, trying a little bit of traction with her lumbar spine?
Yeah, or putting in a pool. Better in the pool because she has pain with using it. So you could put her in a pool, unweight the spine, and have her use it in the same way she might have used it on land and see if she has pain.
Right.
And if not, then you're more suspicious that it's coming from the spine.
Correct.
So, but going back to her primary and starting the sequence of getting examined at her back would also be a reasonable thing to do.
Yep. There you go, Patty. Thank you. And let's see. We got time. Jill and Racine, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'll be quick. I have a pinched nerve near the base of my spine. I have osteoarthritis. Do you think I have good therapy, a good doctor? Do you think building my muscles will help that pinched nerve?
Yes. Is that it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So offloading the joint itself and having some of the muscle in that area
take the load will be very helpful.
And
so,
what kind of activity would do you recommend?
Well, last show we talked a lot about core strengthening.
Exactly.
So a lot of physical therapy directed core strengthening, because you need to do the core strengthening in a way that does not aggravate that pinched nerve and position Jill in a way that when she does her strengthening, it is in an unloaded position for that pinched nerve and where she has the arthritis. It's not going to be a quick fix,
right?
But it is, I call it the Clydesdale. In the long run, it will get you there.
Yep.
And prevent recurrence.
Exactly.
Jill, I hope that helps. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, two guests for you today, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They've been doing this a long time, and it's always fun. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments. Our lines are filled. You could email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Jill and Lori. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at physical therapy issues with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Lori's a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right to the phones. And Ted in Spooner. Ted, hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hello. I had two knee replacements, one year, and I had the other one done earlier last year. I got, all of a sudden, I got a back problem, and my right leg is numb, and below the knee, it feels like it's on fire, and I have a hard time moving that leg. And I'm set up for surgery between the fourth and fifth lumbar to basically cut out the bulge of the disc.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it's awful painful. It's hard to sleep. And the other thing I got is two hernias that I'm fighting. And I also have from cancer from Agent Orange, the shot, loop-on shot, I had a side effects where all my muscles hurt.
Oh, geez.
Oh, boy, you've got a lot going on there,
That's
Ted.
That's right.
Is there a question in there, Ted?
I think
what can I alleviate the pain with easily before surgery?
Well, how,
yeah.
how
surgery on the 28th.
28th of March?
Yeah.
That's so, one more week.
Yeah, you got a week to go. So you would need to discuss that with your physician and or your pharmacist about what you can do in the next week, because they're going to want to know what kind of medications you're taking prior to surgery. Mm-hmm. There are some things that you should probably avoid in a certain time frame prior to surgery. So that is not within my practice act to advise you to that, other than to say you should be talking with your surgeon and your pharmacist about that. Jill wants to say something.
Right. But if there are positions that you can get in the meantime, Ted, that kind of decrease the burning pain, or the burning pain doesn't go as far down into your leg and foot, those are the right things to do. So many times it's unloading your spine. So if it's laying down in a certain position with your knees bent, for example, a pillow under your knees, something like that, or on your side with a pillow between your knees, whatever you can do to kind of alleviate that pain between now and then, is the right thing to do. And I guess the saving grace is just know you only have 7 more days before your surgery.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Good luck with
that. The big thing, Ted, is you don't want to annoy this any more than it already is. You want your back as calm as possible prior to your surgery so that you don't create a big inflammatory soup.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck with that, Ted. Thank you for calling. Jim and Stevens Point, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry I missed the beginning of your show because I have tennis elbow on my left elbow. I've had it on my right side, right elbow, and I've used the band, and that's worked. And I currently am using that band again. But I also swim a lot, and I do the crawl. That's my primary winter exercise. And I'm wondering if that's something that I should not do, or does that not really affect it?
Well, Jim, does it hurt when you do it?
It doesn't.
Okay. Then you should do it. Chances are the crawl stroke is not a big contributor to lateral tennis elbow. You know, it may create some medial symptoms depending upon what you're doing, but chances are that's not an issue, and I would certainly continue that. If you're using hand paddles, I would back off on those, and you may even want to think about avoiding pulling if you're doing pulling where you're really working your upper extremities. If you're at all concerned about it, I put some little short flippers on to unload your upper extremities some and shift a little bit of the workload to your legs for a bit.
There you go. Good luck with that. Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Lake Geneva emailed and says, Larry mentioned he did 60 miles walking. Very, very interested to know what shoes he wears. Brand and model. You may be able to, I can share that information on the air. I wear Brooks tennis shoes, the Ghosts, Brooks Ghost, and they cost around $125 or so, thereabouts. And I'm pretty religious about changing them out. So if I get to around 500 miles, then I'm getting a new pair, and the other pair goes maybe for gardening or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I do a lot of walking and jogging a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I have mapped my run, so I keep track of the miles I put on pretty close that way. And so
that's great.
I like to trade out about 500 miles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Larry has found a pair of shoes that work for him. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that those Brooks shoes are going to work for you. So you need to find a shoe that works for your foot and, you know, the way you walk. So different shoes have different amounts of cushion. They have different shaped lasts on the bottom. So there's tremendous variability in shoes.
And be sure to tune in tomorrow because on tomorrow's show we have a podiatrist on who is, it's our sports day, so he's going to be talking about, the podiatrist is going to be talking about the right shoes for you.
Great. Right. Well, there you go. Shoes. Tune in tomorrow, Mark.
We'll talk about finding the right athletic shoe on tomorrow's program. Craig in Waukesha, we'll go to you now. Hi, Craig.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Long story short, I had a L3-4 fusion, and then about 5 years later, I had a total lumbar fusion where they went to my hip to get bone off to do all the fusions. 2 years after my total lumbar fusion, I started having trouble walking where my thighs and hips would fatigue, and I just have to stop, rest, keep going. I go to the gym 4 times a week. I can walk in water for an hour. On land, I can walk for about 2.5 minutes. So what I've been told is most likely the nerves are not firing correctly to my hips and hip area, which is causing the problem. And I don't know whether to pursue anything because the last thing I want is more surgery, more scar tissue, and have problems with that.
So,
just wondering if you guys have any thoughts.
So who's telling you that it's probably the nerves that aren't firing to your hips? Where did you
physical
get?
Physical therapy.
I'm sorry?
My physical therapist.
Your physical therapist. Okay, so you're in physical therapy currently.
Oh, I am in physical therapy a lot. Right now she's trying dry needling.
To what?
The problem.
What are you
drying? Can't gain strength.
Sounds like claudication.
That's exactly what it sounds mm-hmm. like to me too.
Yeah. Have you returned to the surgeon? And it doesn't mean you need more surgery, but figuring out the root cause of this seems important to me before it progresses.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't see it reversing on your current trajectory. So I would want to find out for sure, not just speculating, you know, that the nerves aren't getting it. Jill and I both, with furrowed brow, she has,
yes.
Are saying claudication.
Right,
so
exactly.
I would
What's
want...
claudication?
It's more of a vascular condition. It's typically called vascular claudication versus neurogenic. Mm-hmm. That's what you're thinking, right,
right.
Lori?
Yeah. Yeah.
So where, based on position or movement, there's an impairment in the blood supply to the muscles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So figuring out the source of your symptoms, if you can only walk 2.5 minutes on land.
Right.
Like that's remarkably debilitating for anyone in their life.
Especially if you can do an hour in the pool.
Yeah.
That's a dramatic
right.
difference.
Right. Right. And unless you want to spend your life in a pool, I would go back to the surgeon or to
a vascular surgeon
or a vascular person and have them. You need to investigate and find the source of this. It's therapy is going to help, but it's not going to fix this problem.
Right.
There you go. Good luck, Craig. Thank you for calling. Well, let's go to Steve in West Bend next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Question I have, and I get called the last time you gals were on the air. I had inguinal surgery, both sides. They're about 4-inch incisions, and they used mesh. That was on the 10th of February. Probably since the day after the surgery, as much as I could, I started walking, and I walked probably sometimes 6-7 miles a day, even possibly more. I'm wondering what I can do. I've asked the doctor to order physical therapy for me to strengthen that groin area possibly so this doesn't happen again. I'm almost 70. I'm still farming, construction, very active. I have my own gym at home. And I don't want this to reinvent itself again.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they did tell me that because it's happened already, possibly again, if I'm not careful.
Yeah, I definitely think seeing a physical therapist to make sure you're recruiting your core musculature correctly is very important for you, Steve. A lot of these inguinal surgeries, we get into trouble because we get a little bit of a tug of war because of how we use muscles to stabilize in our back and abdominal area. So for somebody like you, having a couple visits with a physical therapist to make sure that you are able to recruit the right muscles to stabilize your spine and not over-recruit or overuse other muscles, i.e. have a big muscle imbalance, would be really helpful. So I would absolutely see a physical therapist for this condition. And it sounds like you're active, have a lot of access to things. So probably a couple visits to get you started in the right direction would take care of things.
Jill, what do you think about some sort of an abdominal belt or support for his heavy activities? He said he's in farming, so I wonder about using something like that when he's in a really high demand activity.
That's probably not a bad idea. And in that case, you know, we don't like those to become crutches, but Lori's mm-hmm. giving a really good example of where a support in addition to your musculature might be a good strategy. So talking to someone about wearing an abdominal brace or an abdominal belt when you are doing mm-hmm. those heavy lifting days is probably
yeah.
a good idea.
Just for heavy activity,
right.
Not for routine daily use
Correct.
Or anything like that. But, you know, if you're out farming and doing stuff, you're sometimes not
baling
thinking.
Baling hay.
You're not thinking about your abdominal muscles. And if you're doing it repetitively, you might fatigue. So mm-hmm. just having a little bit of extra support in those situations might make sense.
Right.
Good luck, Steve. Thank you so much for calling. Carol in Toma called, couldn't stay with us. She has tendonitis in her bicep. It's been there since November, and her doctor told her to quit shoveling. what else can she do for treatment? She's not interested in taking meds.
Well, a lot of people aren't, so good for you. So a lot of times we get this bicipital tendonitis up right at the top of the biceps tendon, right at our shoulder, from overusing the biceps because, same thing, a muscle imbalance. We're not using our rotator cuff muscles well enough to stabilize our shoulder. The other thing we know is that if you have a real forward head posture or your humeral head comes really far forward, it can irritate your biceps. So seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits to work on probably scapular positioning her ball in the socket joint a little bit better, and then making sure her rotator cuff is strong enough would probably be helpful.
Mm-hmm. All good.
Yeah.
A listener emailed wondering what type of doctor would they need to see to seek out who would be able to give a hyaluronic
acid mm-hmm. injection.
Yeah.
Typically, they're orthopedic surgeons. Yeah. And the hyaluronic acid injections, we know from a research perspective, work fairly well at the knee. They have not been supported in literature at the hip. So, unfortunately, this doesn't work in all joints yet. But we have pretty good solid evidence that there are people who do have good success with it at the knee. So I'd see a knee orthopedic physician.
Catherine wonders, what's the recommended treatment for elbow bursitis?
Oh, well, not unlike that knee bursitis that Tom had when he knelt down on his knee. The treatment is typically some anti-inflammatory, some icing of the area, but at the core, figuring out why you have it. So that's called housemaid's elbow.
Or student's elbow.
Because that's a new one to me.
Because yeah. they sit and, they, mm-hmm. and they're kind of rubbing their elbow yeah. constantly on a desk while they're typing and things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, it used to be housemaid's elbow from doing the scrubbing on the floor while you're on your knees getting housemaid's knee. You get housemaid's elbow.
There you go.
So, yeah. And we see it in any kind of situation where there's friction. So Jill
Correct.
Talked about that. But also we see it in athletes, like, again, wrestlers mm-hmm. Who are on their elbows mm-hmm. To some extent. So icing and anti-inflammatories are basically what we recommend.
Barbara in Grand Marsh has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. In 2017, I had a knee replacement. It was very, very bad. I went to a different doctor, and he said that the replacement was too large. I went back to the original surgeon, and he said he would replace it for nothing. Didn't charge me a thing, didn't charge me for the hospital. And from that day forward, from my knee down, my leg aches, and especially at night, and it always feels cold.
Mm. Hmm. So have you gone back to that surgeon to report these symptoms?
Would I ever go back to them? No.
Oh. well, you know, if they take down if it was your first surgery cemented, was it a cemented knee? Probably.
I don't know what.
Probably.
Was.
Yeah. So, you know,
revision
surgeries are really difficult. You're going to get that deep bony ache from a revision because of the amount of work they have to do in the bone. The cold is more of a neurologic symptom. So you might consider seeing somebody else, maybe a neurologist, to look at or it could be vascular.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering,
if it's vascular or neurologic. But are you seeing a physical therapist now?
No, I can't afford it.
Oh,
boy. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that gets a little bit dicier.
Yeah.
So how about a primary care physician? Do you have a primary care physician?
Well, I do, and she put me on magnesium.
Okay.
That was one of the things that I'm taking.
Okay.
And also on turmeric.
Okay. Yep.
Now, I just started that about 2 weeks ago, but this wakes me up all night long. I hardly ever sleep.
So are you on anything to help you sleep at night, like gabapentin? Gabapentin?
Well, I was on the gabapentin, and they said that was bad for my kidneys, and they removed me from that.
Did it help with your symptoms?
No.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So then maybe not then. You know, I guess what I would say, Barbara, is you have to continue to go back to your primary to pursue this. You know, that the turmeric works as an anti-inflammatory. It doesn't feel like an inflammatory issue to me. Does it to you?
No, I'm wondering with all of that night pain, is it kind of boring like a toothache? I do think about a terrible bone bruise in the tibia, and those are so painful, really painful.
Do you have any other medical conditions that we should know about, Barbara? Do you have diabetes or?
I am 83 years old. I take two blood pressure pills, a vitamin, the turmeric, and the magnesium.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I would say to continue to pursue this with your primary, who is managing this cluster of symptoms for you, and see if a referral to another specialist.
Or a pain management clinic.
Or a pain management clinic.
Because it does sound kind of multidisciplinary to me.
Yes, you're absolutely
right. Wondering if a pain management clinic.
Good call. Pain management clinic can address multiple aspects of this, Barbara. Mm-hmm. That's a good call, Jill.
Yeah. So speak to your primary about that, and good luck, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling. Mary's been unable to relieve pain in her wrist. An MRI revealed 3 partial torn tendons, carpal tunnel, and a cyst. And she wants to know if this could be relieved without surgery and possible PT.
Oh, well, the question is, what's causing all that? I mean, carpal tunnel is, you know, that's one thing. That's sort of a standalone thing. Mm-hmm. But then she's got a cyst and some tendon, would you say torn tendons?
Torn tendons. Yeah. Partial tear.
Partial tear.
Partial torn tendons.
So how does that happen would be my question, because it's not a very common thing that we see. Was there a fall? Is there an injury? Is there some work that's overdoing it that produced these partial tears and this cyst?
I would see a certified hand therapist. Yep. I would want to exhaust all my conservative options prior to going in for surgery. So seeing a certified hand therapist, and Lori talked about this earlier, it could be a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, and get some exercises and see what you can kind of clear up. And see kind of what remains from a pain management perspective, and then see if that pain generator is a surgical option, i.e. if it's the remaining carpal tunnel, if she still has symptoms into her thumb and finger.
Yeah, they may have seen this before, whereas Jill and I don't see a lot of primary wrist problems. So a certified hand therapist, this may be very familiar to them and have some strategies for you, Mary.
Nancy washes floors on her hands and knees, and wondering,
here you go, Nancy.
In 20 seconds or so, how do you do this safely?
Knee pads,
or I kneel on towels, or the gardening pads that you use in a garden. I throw those down when I do mine.
Yeah, and they have special, the workers who work on their hands and knees, they make special pads for them for their knees. So if I spend a lot of time on my knees, that's what I would do. But I do like Jill does. I throw a towel down.
Yeah. She does yoga poses on her knees as well. Could she use the same for that?
Sure. Absolutely.
You bet.
Yeah. Hey, Larry, before we go, I just want to put a little plug in. Jill was recently promoted to full professor.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's about time.
It's a wonderful rite of passage.
I can speak
from experience for that.
Thank you, Larry.
Congrats. Jill Tynissenbaum, and Jill is a professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.